Welcome back to Your Calls Media Roundtable. For those of you just joining us, I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We are podcasting our show, and you can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And if you have a show idea for us, you can send us an email at yourcall@kalw.org, or feel free to call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And now we're going to talk about what has been described as an historic win for auto workers at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. On April 22nd, according to results posted by the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, 73%, or 2,628 workers at the plant that produces the German brand's Atlas SUV and their ID4 electric vehicle voted in favor of joining the UAW, with 23%, or 985 voters, opposed. So in a piece in The Guardian, veteran labor journalist Stephen Greenhouse noted that the vote in Chattanooga was the first union vote in the UAW's ambitious $40 million campaign that's targeting 13 automakers, including Volkswagen, but also Mercedes, Tesla, BMW, Toyota, Nissan, and Hyundai, with a total of 35 non-union plants operating across the United States. So does this victory signal a major shift in favor of unionization at other foreign car manufacturing plants in the United States? And how did the media cover this historic victory for labor unions? Well, Stephen Greenhouse is a veteran labor journalist and author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. And he's here on Your Calls Media Roundtable to talk about what went down. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Good to be here. So as Joe Biden would say, the VW victory in Tennessee is a big effing deal.
BFD. That is Joe Biden's alternate initials, I think. So we're also very pleased to be joined by Mike Elk. He is an Emmy-nominated labor reporter and the co-founder of Payday Report, an independent news outlet covering labor and unions. Mike, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be on the show after so many years of covering so many defeats in the South to finally see a big breakthrough. It's, as Stephen said, a big deal.
Yeah, well, I appreciate having both of you on to talk about it. It does seem like a really landmark occasion. And before we delve into it, I just wanted to follow up on our segment that we just had around the crackdown on student protesters over what's been happening in Gaza. And I know that this is not directly related, but we did see the UAW president, Sean Fain, criticize the arrests of campus protesters, tweeting, "The UAW will never support the mass arrest or intimidation of those exercising their right to protest, strike, or speak out against injustice." And Stephen, just to start with you, do you see these protests as tying into the labor movement? Do you have any general thoughts around what we're seeing in the terms of the crackdown on college campuses? And then Michael turned to you on that. But Stephen, wanted to give you the first word.
Sure. Mike might disagree with me on that. I don't see these protests tied directly into the labor movement. You know, they're very much graduate student protests. However, on some campuses, graduate students have unionized. Graduate student workers, researchers, teaching assistants have unionized, which is the case at the University of California. So the UAW is angry, upset that some graduate students who were in the union and were exercising their free speech rights to criticize the war in Gaza, that they were arrested, they were harassed, they were suppressed, and they've threatened a strike over that.
Okay, so I appreciate you putting that context.
And people often forget that the UAW now is about, you know, 20-25% of its members work in universities.
Excellent point. Yeah, and Mike Elk, to turn to you on that question, just your general thoughts on what's been happening, and do you see any relation or tie-in to what we're seeing with the unionization effort across the U.S.?
Well, I certainly think, you know, on the surface, it might not seem like a labor issue, but all issues are connected, especially when you're in a fight. And I think what's interesting to bring up is you have to look at Starbucks recently agreed that they would start negotiating with their union. They did this after facing a global boycott because of their opposition to Palestinian protesters, right? The Starbucks had actually started suing its union, Starbucks Workers United, because they were hurting their brand, they were using their name. And then what happened is unions around the world started targeting Starbucks. There was a really great article, I think, in American Prospect that Harold Meyerson did about this. And what happened is unions around the world in big countries like Malaysia and Turkey and other places where there's large Muslim populations were trying to block Starbucks from getting major contracts to come into those countries and expand their market share there. So while on the surface it may not look like a labor issue, when you're in a fight, all these issues are connected. People are searching for allies, especially when you're taking on people more powerful. And with Starbucks union having gotten global unions behind it because of, you know, Starbucks opposition to Palestinian rights, I think it does raise an interesting point that, you know, when you're fighting and you're outnumbered, all these issues are interconnected when you're fighting against oppression.
I'm going to take issue a bit with Mike. You will very, very rarely see me defend Starbucks. I've written many, many articles about how often they've broken the law and they're union busting. You know, I've written at least a dozen articles. But what happened was a leader of Starbucks Workers United on October 8th posted on the union website, Free Palestine, with a picture of a bulldozer knocking down the fence between Gaza and Israel. And a lot of people wrongfully thought that that was a position by Starbucks itself supporting Hamas and defending Hamas for the killings, the murders of 1,200 Israelis on October 7th. So Starbucks tried very, very hard to separate itself from that tweet by someone in the union. And I don't think it's fair to say that Starbucks opposed Palestinian rights. It just, you know, wanted to make clear that it wasn't supporting Hamas. And it kind of went out of its way. And some people jumped on Starbucks and said, oh, you don't support Palestinian rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate both of you weighing in on this and putting this in context. Also, always interesting to have a little disagreement. So I appreciate that as well. Stephen, staying with you, you mentioned up at the top here that this is a BFD, that we've seen this unionization vote go so successfully for the UAW in Chattanooga. Can you tell us why you think this is so significant?
So it's, you know, as many people know, it's very, very hard to unionize in the South because the South is so anti-union, because, you know, politicians there and business there are just vehemently anti-union. And second, it's also very hard to often unionize in factories nowadays because factory workers are so scared that if they unionize, their factory is going to flee to Sri Lanka or Vietnam or China or Mexico. So it's very hard to unionize factories, especially in the South. The UAW, over the past 11 years, has failed at least four times trying to unionize auto workers in the South. And Mike covered this in Chattanooga, as did I. The UAW lost two unionization votes, two unionization elections at Volkswagen in Chattanooga in 2014 and 2019. It lost a unionization vote at Nissan in Canton, Mississippi in, I believe, 2013, I think. And then it made several runs at unionizing Mercedes in Vance, Alabama, and it never really got enough momentum to ask for a formal unionization vote there. So the UAW has really failed several times, and it realizes that, you know, for the union to remain strong, it's important to unionize these 36 non-union plants across the United States, which have undercut the wages and benefits, undercut the competitiveness of the unionized General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis factories. So that's why Sean Fain and the UAW, after winning their huge victory last fall in the contract fights with GM, Ford, and Stellantis. Stellantis owns Jeep and Chrysler. With that tremendous victory under the UAW's belt, with the great publicity they got from that, they thought now's an ideal time to launch this massive unionization drive, you know, aimed at these 13 companies and 36 plants and 150,000 workers. 150,000 workers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Mike, I wanted to ask you to just give your thoughts as well, why you think this is significant, what it represents about the union strategy now going forward, teeing off of what Stephen said about this moment that the UAW feels like they might have now in the South.
you know, in many ways, the two earlier defeats for labor at the Volkswagen plant there, both in 2014 and 2019, were sort of like a Dunkirk moment for organized labor. You know, a moment where we really got beat. We sort of ran away, and we ran away as a labor movement in the sense that there wasn't a lot of heavy investment in the South, right? You know, union leaders look at, you know, the likelihood of victory when they make decisions about investing, right? To win with 73%, I think, which was above something I imagined, I thought, you know, from what I was hearing, maybe they'd get into the high 50s, maybe the low 60s. But to win with 73% is really a huge statement on the popularity of unions in the South and across the U.S. right now. I mean, you know, that 73% matches public opinion pollings, which show that union approval ratings are in the high 60s, the low 70s in the last few years of the Gallup poll. Now, if you look at 10 years ago, when they had union elections down there, you know, union approval ratings were in the, you know, the 40% range, right? Maybe peaking up above 50%, right? So what we've seen is after the pandemic, we saw a massive strike wave. We tracked over 3,000 strikes at my website, Payday Report. And we've seen a huge uptick in strike action, people going out and getting direct action, and also a huge uptick in coverage, positive coverage, not just from the mainstream media, but also from people on social media, which is how a lot of people get their news nowadays. So we've seen a huge uptick. And then, you know, to come onto that, with the success of the stand-up strike, with the giant publicity that it demonstrated, got a lot of folks thinking. This was very different than 10 years ago when the UAW had agreed to two-tier wages as part of a bailout. Now the UAW was taking ground and making advances. And, you know, I think this is really going to open the door in the South, because other union leaders are going to look at this and they're going to say, well, you know, if the UAW is winning so big there, and from what I can tell, it's looking like they're going to win by similar margins at Mercedes. And I don't say that lightly. I've gotten in trouble in the past for saying when I thought they were going to lose badly at places like Amazon. But from everything I can tell, they're going to win bigly at Mercedes, you know, high 60s, 70%, something like that. And, you know, when you have those two kind of wins opening the door, what's going to happen is, you know, there's a lot of facilities that the UAW is targeting around the country. They're targeting a Hyundai plant down the road in Montgomery, Alabama. They're targeting a Toyota engine plant in Troy, Missouri. It's going to create momentum in those plants, because in this situation, the UAW members are, you know, they're talking to one another. And, you know, in previous campaigns, when they tried to win at Nissan or Volkswagen in the South, these were just very isolated campaigns. Now workers feel like they're part of a national movement. They're part of a national strike wave. And everyone wants to be at the cool kids table. I mean, the lunchroom psychology does work here. And so I think we're coming into a moment where you're going to see attempt at those places, but you're going to see a massive ripple effect among the suppliers that supply auto parts in Tennessee, that supply auto parts in Alabama, because they're going to start seeing the wages that those workers are making. Mm-hmm. So this is just the beginning. And I think it's going to lead to a lot of investment from a lot of different unions to go after some of these suppliers, to go after other places. And it's going to create a new sense of momentum that we've not felt in many, many years.
If you're just tuning in, let me just, sorry, let me, Stephen, just want to make sure we let listeners know what you're listening to, which is Your Calls Media Roundtable. And I'm Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about the recent United Auto Workers unionization vote that went successfully for the union in Chattanooga, Tennessee, potentially portending a new era of unionization efforts across the otherwise anti-labor union, generally speaking, U.S. South. If you have questions for our guests, we would love to hear from you. You can join us by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. If you've been part of a union organizing effort, if you have thoughts about how this vote might be portentous in terms of what's going to happen now going forward, again, the number is 866-798-TALK. And we're joined by Stephen Greenhouse, veteran labor journalist, and Mike Elk, Emmy-nominated labor reporter and co-founder of the Payday Report. Stephen, I had to cut you off. I want to give you a chance to respond to Mike's take there on the
I think Mike made a lot of good points. He's right that this will definitely build momentum We're going to see how much momentum it builds. I think another reason the victory at Volkswagen was a big deal was, you know, for a decade or two, you know, the UAW was not usually respected because, you know, it had granted so many concessions, you know, two-tier wages, wage freezes, you know, and the leadership of the UAW would say, we had to do that to help General Motors come out of bankruptcy in 2008, to help Chrysler come out of bankruptcy in 2008, to prevent Ford from going into bankruptcy. But, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, the UAW, you know, was long the nation's iconic, most influential union. In the 1930s, you know, it won the Flint sit-down strike, which unionized General Motors, which was then the world's largest company. And it was a, you know, viciously anti-union company. So that victory really put the UAW map on the map big time and really created a wave, the biggest wave of unionization in American history, because so many workers were inspired by that UA victory at GM. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of, you know, workers in auto plants, when the UAW was seeking to unionize Nissan and Mercedes and Volkswagen 10 years ago, you know, as Mike said, you know, workers would point to UAW and say, you know, what has the UAW done lately for workers? It's agreed to concessions. It's agreed to two-tier wage systems. And mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the reasons the UAW kept losing. Then there's a second thing where the UAW had a really unfortunate and serious corruption scandal where a dozen officials went to jail. You know, union officials embezzled $2-3 million. Two former UAW presidents went to prison. And, you know, when Sean Fain, the current, you know, was elected president of the UAW last year, he promised to bring a very big broom to sweep things clean. He said, no more concessions, no more two tiers, no more corruption. And then, you know, the union won the spectacular gains in the stand-up strike last September and October. They won a 25% pay increase, which is, you know, more than the union had won at GM, Ford, and Stellantis in the previous 22 years combined. It won restoration, the return of cost of living adjustments, which was hugely important, you know, to UAW members, and they were so glad to get it back. They won better pensions. So they won this amazing contract, and it was a way of saying to workers across the nation, and especially workers at auto plants they intended to try to unionize, the UAW is back. We're the great old union we used to be. We're no longer the union of concessions and corruption. And that the UAW is, mm-hmm. you know, kind of moved to the front of the line among unions in the United mm-hmm. States is very important because it is such a generally respected union. I think Mike's right that, you know, with the victory at VW, and it wasn't a 51-49% victory. It was like a knock your socks off 73% to 27% victory. And that's going to make a lot of workers across the South say, if they could win at VW, if they could breach the South's anti-union mm-hmm. citadel, maybe we should consider unionizing where we are. And I should add, you know, mm-hmm. Last week, a big strike was threatened by 7,300 workers at Mercedes-Benz, actually Daimler Trucks, which is part of Mercedes. And that was going to be in a bunch of plants in the South. And the UAW won another 25% raise there and cost of living adjustments and also increase and also profit sharing. And that's a great contract. And again, workers across the South are going to see that the UAW won a great contract in the South, mm-hmm. and they're going to say we want that too. And yeah. I'm sure you can start seeing this. And, you know, some big unions already. The United Food and Commercial Workers, you know, which you know represents workers of many grocery stores and department stores. They're saying, you know, we're not doing enough to organize. We're not doing it. We're not winning enough. We want to be like the yeah. UAW and Sean Fain. So it really is developing interest and momentum.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. And Mike, I wanted to ask you about the right to work laws across the South and how this affects this unionization effort. When right to work, for listeners who aren't aware, it allows workers to opt out of paying fees to a union at their workplace, even if they benefit from the union bargaining agreements. So can you just briefly describe how this might play into the unionization effort going forward?
Yeah, I would say it's going to play in this way. I mean, you know, it's voluntary whether or not you want to be a member of a union in the South. So the unions in the South where they have high turnups are very active. They're looking out for their members. So, you know, those unions are really going to have to look out for their members if they want to maintain their membership. And maintaining their membership means maintaining their revenue. So I think it's going to really put them on notice that they're going to have to really push.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, looking ahead now with this vote, I mean, what might be some of the prospects for some real significant change? Do you think this could lead to maybe less inequality among the payroll inequality that we've seen across the U.S. historically? Could this change the political dynamics of this country if we have stronger union membership in places like the South?
Well, I think it could help stop some of the bleeding that's been going on in the Midwest for a while in the auto parts world. You know, there's been a lot of work shifting to the South because it's cheaper, there's big tax incentives, and this might create a disincentive. Obviously, stronger unions help combat inequality everywhere, so that's going to play a big role. But obviously, I think this is going to lead to a lot of changes. It's going to better the lives of a lot of workers, and hopefully it's going to create a situation where Southern workers aren't pitted against Northern workers.
And Stephen Greenhouse, just to go back to you for the last word here, what do you think is likely to happen now just in the near term and then potentially in the long term going forward for the unionization efforts in the American South?
Good question, but tough question. I agree with Mike that the UAW is very likely to win, perhaps big, at Mercedes. Mercedes is fighting far harder against unionization than the UAW did. Than Volkswagen did. But with those two big dominoes falling in favor of the union, VW and Mercedes, I imagine other plants, Hyundai, maybe Toyota, you know, the workers there will push to unionize too. But, you know, I imagine that Japanese and South Korean companies are going to fight back harder against unionizing than the German companies, because the German companies have such a history of kind of cooperating with unions, except in the United States. So, and I agree with Mike that, you know, as the UAW gathers steam and wins great contracts, that will encourage not just, you know, workers in the auto industry, but workers in other industries to say, we should try to organize too. And mm-hmm. you could see, speaking to workers, you know, that they're very excited by what the UAW has done. You know, Sean Fain is really, mm-hmm. you know, has become arguably the nation's, you know, best known labor leader in his 1 year as president of the UAW, and the nation has really needed, you know, a charismatic mm-hmm. union leader who would draw a lot of attention to labor's gains. You know, Sarah Nelson, you know, at the flight attendants has been great, but you know, Sean Fain has these, you know, and the UAW yeah. have these terrific wins over the past yeah. year, and that's attracting a ton of attention.
The leadership definitely matters. Unfortunately, we're out of time. That was Stephen Greenhouse, veteran labor journalist and the author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, thank you for joining us on Your Call.
You're very welcome.
And also joined by Mike Elk, an Emmy-nominated labor reporter and the co-founder of Payday Report, an independent news outlet covering labor and unions. Thank you, Mike, for joining us.
Thanks for having me again.
So to listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can give us a review. Email any show ideas and feedback that you might have to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and it's Your Call.